Welcome to TLD Talks, where we share insights about key legal and business matters that are impacting SMEs today. Bringing together experts from a range of backgrounds, we'll be tackling the issues that matter to you. I'm Ed Simpson, CEO of The Legal Director, and on this episode, I'm joined once again by Chris Parr, one of our very experienced client legal directors. And we're going to be continuing our discussion on negotiation, providing you with strategies and tactics to get the outcomes that you want. So welcome back, Chris.
Good one.
Last episode, we covered best practice when it comes to preparing for a negotiation. And on this episode, we're going to talk about what happens next. Let's take ourselves into the meeting room of the first formal negotiation session. How does it typically start? Does one side take the floor? Do you read anything into the fact that one side stands up first and puts their points, you know, we must have this on the board?
You have to work out what the nature of this meeting is. In English law, as we know, certainly it's quite easy to make contracts. You've got two willing parties, two commercial parties with legal representation possibly in the room. Did they intend to create legal relations? If you go back to contract law 101, often we say there's no deal until it's written down on paper and signed by duly authorized people. You can have letters exchanged to that effect. But to go to your exact question then, there's a different play for every negotiation you go into, I think. I like to think that by using this wants board approach, if I walk into a room and say, well, look, we've been thinking about this and we've paid attention. Here's a list of what we think you want. Might help us as we develop our discussions. Because in this first meeting, you know, you're not getting down to nitty-gritty drafting. You're trying to sketch out the deal and the nature of the deal. So sometimes, you know, if they've fielded a vice president and you haven't got one, maybe their vice president feels is duly entitled to speak first. Or if it's their office, you know, well, we'd like to welcome you. You can't call it that way. It's just how the relationship has developed to get you to that room will determine how it opens up. But there's no special advantage, except, I think, having the wants board. If you can get it, you can get some control over the process of the meeting.
So I can absolutely see how powerful a tool the wants board can be for early stages and setting the scene and looking for key areas of agreement and identifying where some of the gaps might be and using that as a springboard for detailed discussion in certain areas. Just having in mind, if you remember in the last episode, we mentioned the old adage about no plan surviving first contact with the enemy. So what do you do if you, having done all your thorough preparation, you get the items that you had on your once bored, you put them on the flip chart in the meeting room and the other side just say, no, you got it completely wrong. What you have assumed about us is completely wrong. We don't actually want that. We want something totally different. How do you react in those circumstances?
Okay. Then we better go back to ground zero. There's a lot to learn. Please now help us to understand what it is you want. And we'll just sit back and become ears. I don't think it's a defeat. You can't look at it as a bad thing. In fact, you could look at it, turn it on its head and say, well, wow, that's the most productive meeting I've ever been in because I've learned a whole raft of stuff that for some reason we couldn't learn anywhere else.
And then just let's muse over a couple of other scenarios. If you get into the room having done all the preparation that we talked about last time, and it's clear that your counterparts haven't done anywhere near as much or any preparation themselves, is that an advantage? Is that a positive or actually is it a risk? Would you modify your behavior?
That's a very interesting question because it takes me back to a position I was in. And we were up against a company that should have been better at it. But it became clear to us that the guys we were talking to didn't really understand the deal that they were trying to achieve. It was quite a complex site sharing structure where we were going to let them operate on part of our chemical plant. And that's a really complex thing to achieve. We didn't cotton on quick enough that they were a bit amateur. We'd done several of these things already. what happened is stretched the negotiation out probably by an extra 3 months. And it did become frustrating because we would put things forward and they would say no. And we wouldn't understand why they were saying no, because yes was the obvious answer from a practical perspective.
We talked last time about this approach of going into a negotiation and seeing it as a method to get to agreement, and both sides coming out of it having got what they want. And so this win-win concept that Harvard Business School championed. What tips have you got where you get into the room and it's clear that somebody on the other side hasn't been on the Harvard negotiating course and hasn't read the book and is just a bit of a bully and wants to win and feel like their opponent, IU, loses?
Dealing with difficult people. There are some physical things which are quite interesting. Where you position yourself in the room. Sitting facing each other is aggressive. Sitting beside people is far less aggressive. So going to sit next to the bully or the difficult person, let's not call them a bully, sitting next to them as opposed to across from them is dynamically interesting. Using the team, I mean, there's a lot of work done on team dynamic. You don't want it to become you versus them. So calling others to help. So if the toughie is on the other side, ask his colleagues. The theory is that you use the group.
And you hope that the team are not totally browbeaten by
And sometimes you just say, well, I'm not going to be treated like this. I'm leaving. And that's quite a shocking event for someone to say, well, I'm not putting up with this anymore. I'm out of here. And you just open the door and walk away. That can have quite a dynamic effect on the room.
And then just thinking about managing the dynamics on your side of the table, when you're 2-3 days into what can be quite an intense process, how do you deal with if people on your side are starting to go off script, either because they're really tired or because they've kind of forgotten some of the prep and they're thinking, okay, I can feel a deal here. Let's just give this point and then we'll be fine. Let's assume that you're the lead negotiator and you sense somebody on your team is going to cave in and say something stupid. How do you deal with that dynamic?
In all seriousness, you try and call a timeout. Yeah, and you touch on a point about tiredness. There is this macho belief that you pull an all-nighter. I'm not a huge fan of that. And I've been in long-winded negotiations where everyone does get too tired. Your brain goes funny and you start saying stupid things and doing stupid things. But assuming that you are aware of what's going on in the room and you are aware of your team, you just pull them out. You just say, okay, I think we need to take 15 minutes. Can we break out? So a breakout room, each side should have a place to go. Just take them for a walk around the outside. Say, yeah, I can feel you're a bit edgy about this. Can we thrash it out? And you may agree with that. I mean, we talked before about you're not only negotiating with the people across the table, you're negotiating with your own group. Yeah, they might have a good point. Have everyone primed before you go in. If you feel you need to say something that's a bit incendiary, don't say it out loud. Pull us all out into a breakout room. We can take 5 minutes to chat about it.
So let's fast forward in our negotiation. Everybody on both sides of the table has done their prep. Everybody's being, well, at least not unreasonable. We have got to the position where we have a sort of common wants board and we've identified common areas. We might even have some points of agreement, but we've also identified gaps. And some of those, we might have had an initial discussion about some of those points. Just thinking about how we sort of move from there's a negotiation happening, it is moving in the right direction, it's successful, but we're probably not going to get through everything today. We might have to have round two or round three. How do you capture the good stuff that's happened? So if there are points where there's violent agreement, how do you capture those and say, okay, that's done and now we don't have to talk about those anymore. We're focusing down on the important stuff.
Yes, I think there's what might be called a toolbox of different tools for different circumstances, but the simplest of all tools, minutes of meeting. And like all good minutes, maybe there's a next steps So your side is going to go off and look at these 4 points, and our side is going to go off and look at these 4 points, and we'll agree to come back again, get back together again in 2 weeks' time or whatever. But minutes of meetings, very, very powerful.
And presumably you would advocate going through a similar planning process for round two, round three. So you come away from the first round, let's say there are 10 points, we've agreed 6 of them, that's great, but now we need to focus on the 4 that are remaining. Would you go through that same process of wants and needs for the reduced list of items?
So yeah, be realistic. Every time you go out to negotiate, plan, organize, structure, and maybe at the point where you've got one item left, that's when you roll out your CEO, your big gun, and say, okay, well, you two big people better get together and nail this one down, because we've beaten ourselves to death over this, and this is the last point. You need to go and have a final meeting and settle it.
Okay, so we've got to the end of our negotiation process. I'm guessing that there's still more work to be done. We've agreed all of the key points. We talked earlier about there's no agreement until there's a signed contract, but presumably there's something that would come out from this final successful round of negotiation that captures everything that's been agreed, but it's still not a contract, or is it a contract at that stage?
There are probably two options. People talk about MOUs or memorandums of understanding, and they talk about heads of agreement. I see them as two completely separate things. The memorandum of understanding is like a super minutes. The MOU, I think a lot of organizations maybe even have a policy about not signing MOUs, you know, unless someone at a senior level has agreed it. They're quite powerful documents in that they set things a bit more in stone. The key is in the word understanding. This is our understanding of what we all talk about, what we all want. I typically break them out into binding and non-binding. The binding bit is, this is not a binding agreement. So again, the dichotomy of agreeing that it's not an agreement is a bit weird. Confidentiality, this document is confidential.
Presumably that bit would be, you would want that to be legally binding.
So yeah, you know, I would typically say, and these three provisions are legally enforceable, and the governing law is, you have to put a governing law clause in and do all the things. Yeah, it becomes a bit of a pain. But yes, you have a binding agreement, but this isn't a binding agreement.
It's a concept that lawyers will be familiar with, but some of the listeners, non-legally trained listeners, might struggle to understand this idea that you can have a written document that purports to set out areas of agreement, but it's not a binding contract. But even within that, you can have certain bits that you can say, this is legally binding and therefore enforceable if you don't comply with it. I guess the key takeaway there is, if you are capturing what has been agreed through the negotiation, and in any way you want to make any parts of your MOU binding, you need to get your lawyer involved, you need legal advice. And if you're dealing internationally, then regardless of whether you think it's going to be binding or not, you need to get legal advice to understand the implications of what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, in England, basically, you want to say there is no agreement, and this is just an understanding of what we think's going on. Then you move to the heads of agreement. Heads of agreement, again, the key is in the word agreement. We've actually agreed these things, but we haven't agreed them in a legally binding, you can sue me sort of way. But we've agreed that the packaging will be blue. We've agreed that we will deliver every third Tuesday, but we still haven't agreed the price. But at least those things are set. And then there's a sort of etiquette among negotiators that once you've signed up to a heads of agreement, it's really bad form to come back later and say, you remember that blue thing we discussed and wrote in the heads of agreement? Well, actually, we'd like yellow. It's not an agreement, so they can do it. They can change from blue to yellow. But it's really bad form. You know, it's not cricket. When you sign up to a heads of agreement, you really have to be very confident that you genuinely think what you've put down is agreed. But you're still not sellable. You know, it's not actionable.
Yeah, it's a very clear statement of intent. And then I guess it's your reputation and your business ethics on the line. If you're the kind of business that agrees something like that and then backs away from it, then you might find that that pushes the other party away and they never want to deal with you.
Yes, and that news gets around the industry and suddenly people treat you a bit differently and your negotiations become more difficult.
So whilst it might not be legally enforceable, you can't be sued on it, you should treat them with the appropriate seriousness.
Yes, and by going from understanding to heads of agreement, you're walking up the ladder to the deal, and the heads of agreement can become the index, of course, for the final documentation. You might give the heads of agreement to your lawyers and say, right, now you lawyers go paper it over and write it into your funny language. So it becomes the index to the agreement.
And yes, that whole process of getting from that stage to a final binding contract is the subject for another podcast. In fact, I think it's the subject of a podcast that we did several years ago. It may even have been the first one in the series when we talked about the importance of getting your contracting right. So, Chris, that brings us to a really nice conclusion with everything having been kicked off to the lawyers to do their magic and turn your MOU and your heads of agreement into a binding agreement. It's been a fascinating discussion over a number of podcasts. So thanks very much for bringing your experience and some great stories and tips. Can I just ask you to summarize, if you were to give three or four key takeaways about the whole process of preparing for and actually then engaging in a negotiation, what would you say are the critical things?
Number one, criticality, prepare. Don't just walk in and say, right, what we're here for. Preparation is 80, even 90% of the exercise. Delve deep into the other party. Look at them as much as hard as you look at yourself. Get your team to do their job. So the sales folk should know a lot about the customer. And so pick their brain. Remember, you're negotiating as much with your own side as you are with the other side. Make sure you set out your rules of engagement going in. So confidentiality, non-disclosure, no deal until there is a deal. Call in your lawyer. Say, how do I make sure that I don't trip over here and get myself locked into something that I don't want, or at least before I want it? Formalize your structure. Treat it as a process of things. So you see it as climbing up the ladder to a mutually acceptable, hopefully long-standing, mutually happy agreement.
Thank you, Chris, again. That brings us to the end of the podcast. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed our discussions over the past few episodes, you can subscribe to our monthly TLD talks covering a wide range of legal and management topics. You can also find TLD talks on Apple, Spotify, and Google. The details are also on our website, www.thelegaldirector.co.uk. If you'd like to know more about negotiation, or how to prepare for it, or how to get better at it, or you'd like to know more about the wider work of the legal director and how a part-time legal director can save you time and money, then do give us a call on 020 3056 8538 or visit our website.